Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. At SFO, you can discover award-winning flavors and unique shops all before takeoff. Learn more about what's at SFO at flysfo.com.
Hey there, this is Brittany Luce from NPR's It's Been a Minute. KQED's podcasts like The Bay, Bay Curious, Mind Shift, Right Nowish, and more all tell the stories of the Bay and beyond with reliable, human-centered journalism. They aim to inspire, make you think, entertain, and expand your understanding of the place you call home. Here's how you can support podcasting at KQED.
Showing your support is easy, and you can join Brittany in supporting KQED Podcasts too at donate.kqed.org/podcast. That's donate.kqed.org/podcast.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Alexis Madrigal. Zan Zendegi Azadi, women, life, freedom. That's been the rallying cry of protesters in Iran since the death of a 22-year-old Kurdish-Iranian woman, Mahsa Amini, while she was in the hands of the country's morality police. Her death reignited protests against the regime and its repression of women. Women have torn off their veils, a demand for human rights. Women, life, freedom. There have been other waves of protests, but many observers say these feel different from 2019 or 2015 or 2009. Hope and fear are growing. Women, life, freedom. Could it be different this time? The young people in the streets seem to think so. Welcome to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Protests continue in Iran. Today, we're going to talk with members of the Bay Area community to provide context for the situation. These histories are longer than any media moment. The dimensions of the situation span the Iranian diaspora, which is not monolithic. There are important distinctions between generations, between those born here and in Iran, between those who've arrived recently and those who've been building their lives here for years, between the religious and the secular. We hope to illuminate the protests abroad and their links to our neighbors here in our cities around the Bay. But joining us first, we go live to Iran. We're joined by a 27-year-old political science student. We're not using her name for her safety. Welcome to Forum. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hello, everyone. Thank you. I'm so glad that I'm joining you. And excuse me for my English, because when I got excited, I can't talk very well.
You and sound
I'm
great.
I'm pretty excited right now.
Tell us, what's it been like in the streets where you are?
Well, not just the street. I think everything about this movement and protests are pretty new. I mean, I've never felt this way in the past protests and past movements. It was always some very small group people. But now we are all out, and I can see religious people, as you said, and secular. I can see everybody who are protesting, men and women together. And that makes me feel that maybe this could be the new hope for us. Maybe this could be the end of this tyranny.
So it sounds like the emotion that's winning right now is not fear, but optimism about what could happen.
Yes, of course. Of course. Yeah.
So when you see these protests and you see women and men protesting together, mm-hmm. is that how it began in the protests that you've seen? Or did you see women leading protests and men join? Or how has it actually played out?
Not really. I think we're both protesting at the same time. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, most of the women were the leaders. They were shouting at the first, but men and women were together from the very first time.
So talk to me about the relationship between protests that are happening on the ground, people in the streets, mm-hmm. and what's happening online in social media as you can access it in Iran.
I hear from most of the people in the streets that it's fine by us, that maybe some people can't come to streets, that it's fine. I don't know, there are some of them are mothers, fathers, they have toddlers. It's fine, so they can just go online and use hashtags and these kind of, you know, help. And I think we are all finding our own unique ways to fight against the regime. And for example, some business owners that they are producing headscarves, they said that we are not going to produce any headscarves again, you know. I think everybody is finding a way for itself to fight against the regime. It's not just one way.
Yeah. Have the protests you felt safe, or are you worried about violence and a crackdown by the regime?
I was horrified. I mean, it was really, really scary. But, you know, when I saw the bravery, especially from the young women, younger women than me, for example, I don't know, 17, 18 years old, I was like, yeah, maybe we can do this. They are doing it. So we can go to, yeah, I think their bravery affected on me. But still, I'm a little afraid when I go to the streets.
Mm-hmm. Do you worry about your family? Are they also involved in the protests?
One of them is involved, and yes, I'm very worried about them. And even my friends, sometimes they check our social media, you know, the police, and I told all of my friends, if they arrested me, please delete all my messages.
What do you think is going to happen next? Does it feel like the protests are gaining momentum still?
Mm-hmm. You know what? Maybe this protest won't, will not, you know, win for like next week or, I don't know, next month. But I think there is a new spirit in this movement. There is a new spirit in our people. And maybe it will take a year for us to change the regime. But I'm sure that we will continue fighting, sometimes not just by going to streets, sometimes just by remove our headscarves, you know. So we are gonna fight, we are gonna continue, but maybe you won't see us in the streets again or something like that, but I'm sure that this spirit continues in our souls, in our lives, of course, because, you know, fighting against regime is a daily thing in Iran. Every day when I'm going out, I had to put something that I don't really like to put it on. And that's a fight for me.
Mm-hmm. You know, the chant that we've been hearing, Zan Zendegi Azadi, and I apologize for my Farsi, to much, much worse than your English. What does that mean to you? Like, what does that chant mean to you?
Well, first of all, that chant was in Kurdistan province in Iran, and it was in Kurdish language, Jen Jian Azadi. And then in Iran, in Tehran, we shouted that in Farsi, Zan Zendegi Azadi. And you know what? All of a sudden, because I don't know how to express myself about this, but all these years, the government was telling us that Kurdish people, they want to, I don't know, they don't like us, they want to, there are some of them are terrorists or something like that. And when we were all fighting for same reason, for the same thing, it felt very, very, I don't know how to describe my and describe my feeling. So at first, it wasn't about the chant, it was about that we translated the Kurdish chant to Persian. And then I hear that some people in Italy and France translated into their language and chanted again. So I realized that this is something universal that can connect us together. And now I hear from Kurdish people in Syria that they are chanting this. And I can see that this is a chant for not just me, for not just my country, for every country in the Middle East, because all of the women in the Middle East needs a new life, needs a new way of life, needs freedom.
What do you want from the outside world? You know, like, what do you want from people in the diaspora in the United States, or just, you know, how can people help you fight for your human rights?
Well, as I told you before, I think everybody can fight in their own ways. And I think everybody can think about this and find a way, find a unique way. But I think the very best way to help us is to reach out to your senators or representatives in parliament, I don't know, whatever you have, and ask them to to put pressure on our government. While we were protesting in the streets, President Emmanuel Macron from France had a meeting with our president, and that was really offensive to us. So I ask everybody in the West to please put pressure on your I don't know, any politician that you can reach out. And that's a very, very good way. And also you can share our videos, share our voices. Sometimes we don't have internet, and that's a very, very good way to help us.
What kind of government, you're a political science student, what kind of government would you like to see replace the current regime in Iran?
A secular government with no religious strings and, democratic and secular government.
Yeah. We're talking about the protests in Iran with a student joining us by phone from Iran. We're not using her name to protect her safety. We want to hear from you. Are you part of the Iranian community in the Bay Area? How are you and your loved ones doing? How closely are you following the situation? You can give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, we're KQED Forum, and the email is forum@kqed.org. So what are your hopes for the next several months in Iran?
I hope that people continue fighting. I hope that when I go to streets, I can see the people, I can see their face impressions had been changed, you know. I want them to support us, support girls, because I mostly want to go out without headscarves. And if morality police want to arrest me, I expect people to help me and don't let them to arrest me.
Yeah. Have you seen people being arrested or being kept from being arrested?
Not personally, but like a month ago, my mother was kind of near to arresting.
We, again, are talking about the protests in Iran with a student joining us by phone from Iran. We're not using her name to protect her safety, and she's going to stick around for the rest of the show. We'd love to hear from you. Are you part of the Iranian community in the Bay Area? Give us a call. The number is 866-733-6786. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for more Forum right after this break.
Support for Forum comes from San Francisco Opera. Set 10 years after a school shooting, the critically acclaimed opera Innocence takes us into a complex emotional journey where our understanding of innocence and guilt is constantly upended. Kaija Saariaho's ethereal score collapses the past into the present as a community of survivors grapple with how to move forward. Don't miss the highly anticipated American premiere of Innocence, June 1st through 21st. Learn more at sfopera.com.
We've all got those parts of our house where the internet just won't go. Well, if you had wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you could worry less about dead spots. Because with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you get fast speeds, reliable connection in every room, and power for all of your devices, even when everyone's online. That's wall-to-wall Wi-Fi, only with Xfinity. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're talking about the ongoing protests in Iran. We're still joined by a student who's joining us by phone from inside the country. We're also joined by Persis Karim, a poet, essayist, and director for the Center for Iranian Diaspora Studies at San Francisco State. Welcome. Thank you for joining us, Persis.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're also joined by Shakayek Sirus, an artist here in the area. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we have Hoda Katebi, an Iranian-American writer and community organizer. Welcome, Hoda.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
You know, Hoda, I want to start with you. You know, we were just hearing from this student in Iran. You're also a young person. How does it feel to just hear about what's happening on the ground?
It's very exciting. Absolutely terrified and scared on behalf of all of the incredibly brave, especially young women on the front lines, just like our unnamed guest. I think that really this has been a really exciting time, a really inspiring time, and I think that Iranians and non-Iranians around the world have so much to look at in terms of what's happening on the ground in order to draw inspiration to fight against state violence. Mm-hmm.
Persis, you know, we know that the sort of proximate cause, like the match for this, was the death of Mahsa Amini while in custody of the morality police in Iran. But obviously these protests didn't come out of nowhere. This is a very long movement fighting against regime. Can you give people some of that context?
Sure. I just want to say this morning I had a text exchange with my cousin in Iran, and echoing what the caller from Iran said, she told me that she felt a palpable shift, and this is what she said. Before, we would shout, "Don't be afraid, we are in this together." Now, she says, people are shouting, "Be afraid, we are all together." So, and that's a cousin who experienced the 1979 revolution as a young woman at the age of 17 and was in protests against the mandatory hijab at the time. And so she has the long view. And as do I came of age in 1979. And one of the things that I think is really important for listeners to know is that the death of Mahsa Amini is just one of many deaths at the hands of state violence in Iran. And the protests against gender apartheid in Iran has been going on since the beginning of the establishment of the Islamic Republic. But I would like to point out that in 2006, there was a very important movement called the 1 Million Signatures Campaign, which was an effort to reform the basically gender discriminatory laws around child custody, divorce. And those attempts have been foiled by state violence, by attempts to arrest some of the dissidents, some of the lawyers who have defended dissidents, and of course, journalists who have been covering it. Mm-hmm. So it's been a wholesale kind of undermining of people's ability to participate in civic reform inside of Iran. So how we got to this place in some ways is a result of earlier moments when people rose up, either in street protests, but also in very, mundane ways, trying to hold conferences, trying to have petitions, trying to organize meetings. That's why social media is so important right now, because people don't have access to meeting spaces, and because so much of the infrastructure of civic life has been controlled by state actors. So we want to make sure that we identify the importance of Mahsa Amini's death at the hands of the morality police, but also to identify the much longer struggle of women in Iran to fight for women's rights and, what I would argue, human rights, going back to, as I said, 2006. And then 2009, of course, the Green Revolution, Green Moment, when people were protesting the election of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. And then more recently, 2017, and then 2019, when there was the first big shutdown of the internet, when people were protesting against the exorbitant price of fuel in December 2019. So part of what people are expressing is a long frustration with their inability to have their demands met around human rights and women's rights, but also a frustration with the way that they have been met when they have tried to engage.
You know, just following up, you've mentioned potential reforms to some of these gender discriminatory laws, you know, I guess what would be an easing of this gender apartheid. But that doesn't seem to be the goal of these protests, is it? Or is it, do you think?
I think that moment has passed. I think the problem is that so many of the women who led those earlier movements have been jailed. You may have heard of Nasrin Sotoudeh. She was a human rights lawyer who defended many dissidents, including some of the women who were part of the 1 million signatures campaign. And she's still in prison and recently, you know, was in a hunger strike. Shirin Ebadi, who was the Nobel Peace Prize winner in 2003, she was driven out of the country after the 2009 elections. So I think the moment for that kind of reform may have already passed. People are beyond the point in which they can expect anything but the state to meet their demands with violence, aggression, and suppression.
Yeah. Shakiyak Sarous, there have been protests in the Bay Area in support of what's happening in Iran. For you, what's it been like to see solidarity in this transnational way?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this time, after I'll also say that I came after the Green Movement. So since 2011 that I moved to the Bay Area, I witnessed a lot of protests also from my generation who came after the Green Movement, 2009. Mm-hmm. But this time, I have to say, it's very optimistic and hopeful because people in our community, regardless of any political views or any backgrounds, they are actually standing up for people, and they are being the voice for people in Iran. So it's and also like other people for the first time are listening to what's going on in Iran, because I know that because of the political background that is happening in the Middle East and also Iran specifically, sometimes it gets confusing how they are receiving the information due to propaganda that is happening. So it's really hopeful actually right now to see this.
Yeah. Hoda, I wanted to ask you how people can support the rights of women in Iran to wear whatever they want without falling into Islamophobic tropes about hijab and dress.
Yeah, I think this is a great question. Also because I think that's precisely the rhetoric that the Iranian government is trying to push, is that these protesters are against Islam, these protesters are anti-Muslim, when that's not at all the case. And we see actually the right wing in the United States or other places around the world echoing, quite ironically, the same rhetoric of the Iranian government, when in fact, just like the student mentioned, this is about mandatory hijab, and this is about so much more. This is about women's rights broadly in Iran. This is about this is not just about the Gashe Irshad or the so-called morality police, but it's about the state. It's about state violence. And it's specifically right now, I think the hijab has become the center focus point and the symbol of this as a symbol of the state. And I think that's something that's extremely important, is that context is key. An Iranian woman burning a headscarf in the streets of Iran, in which has been mandated, is burning a symbol of a state, and it's burning the symbol of state control. Which is very different than, for example, someone in the French government burning a hijab while banning it in schools. So I think that distinction is very important. And as this is a radio show, I feel very inclined to mention that I do wear the hijab myself. I've been wearing it by choice in the United States here most of my life. And I'm you know, very Muslim. It's central to my identity. And so being able to distinguish this is important, not only, I think, not to alienate the millions of Muslims who are in solidarity, Iranian and not Iranian, on the ground, with those who are on the ground, the Muslims, those who are wearing the hijab and not wearing the hijab, who are protesting alongside each other in Iran. I think it really goes to show that this is about state power. This is about patriarchy. This is about control of bodies, and particularly control of women's bodies. And I think that allows, and the demands that I think are being made, such as Zan Zindagi Azadi, as you know, originally was the Kurdish slogan, that demands that women, life, and freedom are at the forefront of a systemic demand for change, and that progress does not have a gender delay. So these demands, I think, also speak to the broadness of this demand, and really ties the issues of autonomy over body with everything that Dr. Farsi has also mentioned before, of just, you know, family law, gender in policy more broadly, workers' rights, economic justice, everything in between.
Yeah. Wanna go to our student in Iran on the distinction that Hoda is making between sort of the hijab as kind of a symbol of the state versus its religious connotations. How do you feel about it?
Before they shut down the internet, I was on the social media, especially on Twitter, and I read some comments from Muslims from other countries, especially Westerners, and they were like, that's kind of be offensive to us, burning hijab. But all I was telling them that this is a symbol of oppression for us. And especially, I want to say this one, do you know, even Muslim women from other countries, from United States, if they come to Iran, maybe the morality police will arrest them too, because their hijab is not proper enough in their eyes. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They have a very strict dress code. You can't just go out with, hiding all of your hair, but showing your neck, or having a very short dress. And that's not enough for them to just having a headscarf. So this is not just about Islam or Muslims. This is their Islam. Yeah. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They are talking about their kind of Islam. This is Islam. And whatever else is not the true Islam.
Yeah. You know, we were hearing earlier from Persis about the earlier movements that had preceded this particular moment. What do you think that your generation of protesters learned about, like, from those earlier big movements?
I think our generation, and maybe even younger generation, are more brave, and they really want freedom, and they have more access to the internet. They know how the world works. And, we are all like, I think because in the past movements, in the past protests, there were some politicians in Iran that they were like, yeah, we're going to make it fine. That's fine. You can protest, but we're going to do it fine. But now there is no politician to support us. So now the thing, what we want is the regime change, and nothing fewer than mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
No.
And I think our generation is more brave and more to the point. They are speaking in the streets more to the point. They aren't like, okay, respect other people. Maybe they will feel bad about our protest. No, they're like, that's enough. Enough is enough. And now we're out. And to be honest, I now hearing shouts and chants from the street right now.
Wow. And if I could add something.
Sure.
My cousin was saying, you know, she's never seen as many men beside women on this issue. And I think that's the palpable shift that she's talking about, mm-hmm. is that men have started to see their own freedoms come at the cost of women's freedoms, and that the situation in Iran affects everybody. And if you think about women, how a society treats women is an indicator of so much in a society. And I think that's, the sort of pressure point has been reached where young people, whether they're women or men, are fed up. They're fed up with the lack of hope. They're fed up with the lack of change. And they're fed up with the lack of opportunities. And I think that's where the situation in Iran is complicated by also economic questions that are the result of sanctions, corruption inside of Iran, and the inability for young people to see a future as it is right now.
Dr. Persis, do you want the U.S. to change its sanctions policies? Like, what do you want the U.S. to do on that foreign policy level?
Well, you know, I think one of the important things to recognize is that Iran uses this anti-Western, you know, it identifies what's happening internally with its political problems with the Iranian people always as it's connected to the West, right? The dynamic of U.S. and Iran relations figures largely. I think it's very important to point out that sanctions are hurting everyday Iranians more than anybody else. And it is, the Biden administration gave a little relief around sanctions for the sake of internet access. However, most of the problems are still there. People can't, you know, easily buy a VPN to get around the closure of the internet because of the sanctions. So I think the sanctions are a secondary issue right now, but I think they're important to point out that we didn't get here also without the question of the bigger problems between the U.S. and the United States. I think that sanctions relief is something that would assist people economically, but I think it's also being used as a tool to pressure the Iranian government, particularly around the Iran nuclear deal. And I think that's a secondary question, and I don't want to hijack the conversation because I think what the young woman in Iran is pointing out is the immediacy of the human rights situation. And it's important to also point out that right now there is an effort to restart the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal. Mm-hmm. And
Which the Trump administration pulled out.
Yes, the Trump administration pulled out. And many people hope that if this is going to be restarted, that the question of human rights should be very much a part of the conversation.
We are talking about protests in Iran. We're joined by a student joining us by phone from Iran who we're not using her name to protect her safety. Also joined by Persis Karim, a poet, essayist, and director for the Center for Iranian Diaspora Studies at San Francisco State. Shoki Aksirous, Iranian multimedia artist. Her work, a collaboration with the Iranian American Women's Foundation, was recently displayed on the Salesforce Tower, if you saw that. We're also joined by Hoda Katebi, an Iranian American writer and community organizer. We're going to get to a bunch of your calls. We have a bunch of people waiting on the phone lines, but we do want to hear from you. Maybe try Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or the email forum@kqed.org. Tell us if you're finding hope in this situation, if you're part of the Iranian diaspora. I'm Alexis Madrigal. This is Forum. Stay tuned for more after this break.
Support for Forum comes from San Francisco Opera. Set 10 years after a school shooting, the critically acclaimed opera Innocence takes us into a complex emotional journey where our understanding of innocence and guilt is constantly upended. Kaija Saariaho's ethereal score collapses the past into the present as a community of survivors grapple with how to move forward. Don't miss the highly anticipated American premiere of Innocence, June 1st through 21st. Learn more at sfopera.com.
We've all got those parts of our house where the internet just won't go. Well, if you had wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you could worry less about dead spots. Because with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you get fast speeds, reliable connection in every room, and power for all of your devices, even when everyone's online. That's wall-to-wall Wi-Fi, only with Xfinity. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're talking about the ongoing protests in Iran. And I want to go straight to the phones. Let's bring in Bahar in San Francisco.
Hi.
Hi, welcome. Go ahead. Tell us your story.
Well, you know about the Iran. There's not much to talk about what's happening in Iran right now. I just called because my parents, my aunts, my cousins, and friends of them, they all go on the streets and they all tell me all the horrifying stories that we don't even hear on the news. There are a lot more than what we hear in the news. And my aunt works in a hospital, and she told me that all the, you know, really horrifying news, the patients that come to the hospital with the security guards, and they don't let anyone to know about those people. So the people on the streets, they're killing people, and it's much more than what we hear in the news. The reason that I say I wanted to just call and then have a louder voice is because, you know, I see all these ambulances that the security guard uses to transport their forces, and they arrest protesters with that, and they transfer them with that. And I'm just like, I don't know, like, how can this happen? Like, how could they be this cruel to do this? And, you know, like, there are, because of this, there's really no ambulances for the actual people who need urgent care, for the protesters on the street who get shot. And, you know, it's more than this. You know, people, we are trying to shout, to just, you know, if you have any Iranian on social media, you'll see how many posts and histories. And, you know, like, we are trying here, because people in Iran, they don't have internet, because we don't know what else we can do. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Like, there is this sanctions that that all the other countries are having against Iran, and we saw that there are some, you know, some release of pressure. Like, we saw some news that, you know, the government of the United States let you know, Elon Musk, it was very viral on Twitter that they are like, yeah, go ahead, provide internet for Iran. But it's like all the sanctions that are against Iran, like, really, like, how can they help if they provide more pressure on people in Iran? They're not really useful. Like, I think the world needs to really help and think about how they can help people in Iran.
Yeah.
And, hey, you know, we hear, yeah, sorry.
No, I understand. Bahar, thank you so much. I just wanted to ask Hoda Kotebi about some of the things that you were saying. I mean, there is this incredibly real application of state violence. So how are you kind of balancing the fear of that and fear for protesters with sort of the hopeful nature of what it is that they're doing? Thank you, Bahar.
Yeah, thank you. And thanks so much for all of your words, Bahar, June. Yeah, so many of us are feeling so many of the same things, and it's really it's its own unique type of pain to also be watching these videos and, you know, from diaspora, and then, you know, sending messages on WhatsApp only to see all of them have one check, so like they haven't been received, and you realize that the internet or certain apps have been censored. So I hear you, and this is a really intense moment, and your feelings are shared by so many of us. So yeah. I appreciate your words. I think something that keeps me really grounded is that, like, as terrifying as things are, as scary as they are, all of my friends who are activists, you know, who have been banned from working for like 10 years. The last time I was in Iran, everyone just had so much depression and everything seemed so hopeless. But I think, as also the student mentioned herself as well too, there's a shift in this moment. And I think that there's so much to be excited about and hopeful about and inspired about. I mean, I think as an organizer that I think also organizes in the United States and sees a lot of this in a different way, of course, but I think for, like, I've learned that, like, even if the ultimate demand is not achieved, there is success just in the ways in which Iranian women have been able to experience freedom in the streets, you know, being able to chant things like death to all oppressors, whether it's the king or the leader. And so things like that, that are momentous moments for Iranians to be able to feel agency over their lives in Iran. And I think just seeing the intersectionality of these protests is also really inspiring. And especially for a community like ours that I think has so many challenges, especially in the diaspora, to be unified. I think what we're seeing in Iran is something totally different. We are seeing such a beautifully unified, for the most part, sort of opposition where workers are coming together, students are on strike, teachers are quitting. This is really like a really momentous occasion. And I actually find a lot of hope and optimism in just seeing young, like Gen Z kids on the streets, like, just, you know, getting things, I'm trying not to curse, like, you know, messing things up in like a very positive way. And so I do think that this, as Ruth Wilson Gilmore says, who's a, you know, a Black writer and activist in the United States, she says that revolution comes in waves, right? So this is all a moment, this is a practice and an opportunity, and it's, these moments will never be lost. And I think what we can learn from this and the experiences that come from this only allow us to build further and further, more unified, you know, and really, I think, continue to move forward in a way that is as unlike anything that we've seen in Iran before.
Yeah. Let's bring in another caller. Thank you for those thoughts. Huma in Mountain View, welcome.
Hello. Thank you for your speakers. Thank you for this program. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we sure can. Go ahead.
Okay. So I'm of an age that I've kind of gone through a few, I'd say, generations. My grandmother was alive when Reza Shah had the coup and came to power. And the first thing he did was remove women's headscarves in public. He had this law that you must not wear headscarf in public. And this is huge change. This is the father of the Shah that the revolution overthrew. Mm-hmm. And that was to take power away from religion and religious people. It wasn't about women. It was about how women represent power in that country and many other countries. And that's the piece that I look at, that right now the women are resilient humans. Americans realize that. I do have to say I live in the Bay Area. I've been here for 40 plus years. And the men, women, families in Iran are absolutely resilient. I was there just a few months ago after 40 years. I went back, I came 77, went back 83 during the Iraq War, and then went back again just a few months ago. Women have been resilient and fighting this regime from day one. They've never stopped. I look at women in the streets, I look at them, and it's like wear bright red lipsticks. They wear nail polish. It's like, fine, I'll put this thing on my head, but you can't control my face. It's inspiring in so many ways, but at the same time, it is incredibly controlled environment. Cameras everywhere, and it is set up in a way that you cannot escape surveillance. It is worse than China. So revolution in ways, perhaps, but certainly evolution has been taking place for decades.
Yeah.
And it is really, the backbone of it has been the Iranian women, and so many Iranian men have been right there, shoulder to shoulder, right behind them.
Huma, thank you.
I am so glad to say that Iranian women are not oppressed. The government oppresses the entire population.
Huma, thank you so much for your comment. I wanted to come to you, Shokiyak Sarous, just about the different ways that this current movement is playing for different generations with their own experiences of Iran.
It's really amazing that I personally experienced Green Movement when in 2009, actually, and how everything shifted from since then. The new generation, as the girl from the Tehran was speaking also, they are so brave. And it's I was just talking to my friends from our generation who came from Iran to the States after the Green Movement, and how we were trying to kind of like go to the protests or like fight for our rights, and how we were also like had a lot of fears, and how we were pushing the limits a little bit. But now seeing all the new generation just like be so brave and go inside and inside a protest and just demand what they want. It's just so amazing to witness. And one of the things that I think we can do, I still have my family in Iran, and I still have a lot of friends in Iran, and the little time that they actually have internet to come and speak, the only thing they ask is just like be the voice. So the voice is not being muted, because that's why the government, take the internet out, or like they shut down the internet, or like they don't want the voice to come out. So that's really important for people outside to kind of like notice that, how it's important to be the voice.
Yeah.
But we can educate, because we come from so many different generations that we experience actually Iran in so many different ways.
Yeah.
Depends on what time and, which era we are coming from. So it's really important to do storytelling and,
For one second.
Yeah.
This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. And for more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Shokiyak, I did want you to kind of finish that thought, in particular about how you feel the sort of culture making and art that you do has a kind of influence in helping be that voice for Iranian women.
I mean, as an artist, I think it's really important to just because I feel like art can be a tool to bring awareness and also like create action. That's one of the things that I start doing, because I'm also like having a social practice background in art. And one of the things that we realized, even like when I was in Iran in Green Movement time, how much, like the posters, the way that we are actually using art, how we are kind of like going beyond what is the news and propaganda, and how we are kind of like sharing that news and stories and demanding from the government. I think art can be a great tool, and the way that all artists come together to kind of like come up with an idea to how easier we can share that news, it's really important, in my opinion. And how actually past years, this has been a tool also, like whether it's a mural or it's like bringing people to do performances or anything like that, it's kind of like spreading the word easier.
Let's go back to the phones. Saida in San Jose, welcome. Hey, Saida, can you hear me? All right, I'm going to put you back on hold, and let's go to Paimon in San Jose.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I initially when I called, I just wanted to ask for support from all the Americans around me. But as I was listening to people, one thing that I realized is that the history of how we got here is one of the things that a lot of non-Iranians are not aware. And that is something that I think I wanted to emphasize here, that the movement for change, the movement for reform has been happening since the start of the revolution. At the start of the Iranian revolution, it wasn't as much Islamic as it is right now. It had a lot of left-leaning support that was very quickly executed back in the 80s. And there was a lot of people who were more towards secular governments that, again, all of them were executed, or like there are mass killings that happened during the 80s that are in support of that. Back in the 2000s, the Green Movement, as Shaghaiq earlier said, this was a reformist movement. The whole idea behind it was to change the government from inside, so gradual, incremental improvements in many aspects, in economy, in social rights, in women's rights, in many aspects. But that, again, was brutally oppressed. And back in the 2020, back in 2021, each wave of the protests that come along, they have different goals. But the thing about them is that, you know, like, for example, back in the 2020, it was more economy, or a lot of these people are all of people are in this together. This is not just about one topic. Right now, if you go ask the people in Iran, hey, if we remove the mandatory hijab laws, are you going to go back home and be fine with the government? That's not going to happen. If you say, hey, we're going to remove the so-called morality police, are you guys going to be okay? That's not going to happen, because this is not a single issue revolution. No revolution is a single issue topic. And while this is absolutely true that the main figures in this one are women, this is a feminist movement, this is not something that you can... And I think this one is more targeted towards people who don't know that the women in Iran and men besides them have been fighting for these rights for more than 40 years.
Yeah.
So this is not something that can be squished with very easily.
Thank you so much for that history. That was amazing, Paimon in San Jose. You know, I wanted to end our show going back to our student who's joining us by phone from Iran. What do you want people to know just in our last seconds here about what's happening there?
I just want to say, if you don't see any pictures, any videos from us anymore, if you didn't hear from us anymore, don't think that we are giving up. We will fight. We will continue fighting.
Yeah. Thank you so much. We've been talking about the ongoing protest for women's rights in Iran with a student who's been joining us. We're not using her name to protect her safety. Persis Karim, poet, essayist, and director for the Center for Iranian Diaspora Studies at San Francisco State University. Shaghaiq Sirous, an Iranian multimedia artist. Her work, a collaboration with the Iranian American Women's Foundation, was recently displayed on the Salesforce Tower. And Hoda Katebi, an Iranian American writer and community organizer. We could have kept going on this for two more hours. Thank you so much to all of our callers as well as to our guests. My name is Alexis Madrigal. This is Forum. Thanks for joining us.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, the Heising-Simons Foundation, and the Bernard Osher Foundation, supporting higher education and the arts.
Support for Forum comes from San Francisco Opera. Set 10 years after a school shooting, the critically acclaimed opera Innocence takes us into a complex emotional journey where our understanding of innocence and guilt is constantly upended. Kaija Saariaho's ethereal score collapses the past into the present as a community of survivors grapple with how to move forward. Don't miss the highly anticipated American premiere of Innocence, June 1st through 21st. Learn more at sfopera.com.
We've all got those parts of our house where the internet just won't go. Well, if you had wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you could worry less about dead spots. Because with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you get fast speeds, reliable connection in every room, and power for all of your devices, even when everyone's online. That's wall-to-wall Wi-Fi, only with Xfinity. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.